Hi, you're listening to Great Thinking, Ideas and Conversations from Greenbelt. We're Greenbelt. We're somewhere to believe in.
Welcome to Sustainababble, live.
Yeah. Hey, come on.
Hello, Dave.
Hello, Ollie.
Hello. Welcome to Sustainababble, live at Greenbelt. Thank you very much for coming. Can we have a big hello? So I am Ol, and this is...
Dave.
Hello.
Hello.
Starting off at a funny angle. Hang on. There we are.
As Dave said, that person you heard introduced in the podcast was my 10-year-old niece, who terrifyingly was 5 years old when we started this podcast, so we're feeling a little bit old. But we are here at a festival, Dave.
Yes, we are. Is this when I have to press the thing? We've got technology. You press the thing. Hang on, I'll press the thing. Wait a minute. I'll press the thing. We're at a festival, Ol.
Thing.
What's a music festival, Uncle Ollie?
Well, glad you asked, Arabella. So, it's a place, I guess, where lots of people come a long way in their cars to throw plastic into buckets. That's right, isn't it, Dave?
That's what a festival is. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But this is, of course, not just any old festival, Ol. This is the Greenbelt Festival, which is not what you call a music festival so much as a festival of thinking and activism and a bit of music and a bit of throwing stuff into buckets. So it's all going pretty well. We're in a tent. Call this a tent. Marquee or some description. Right, you press the button now. Press the one that says smelly.
Oh, yeah, that one.
I bet it's really smelly in there.
Yes, it is really smelly in here.
Not too bad, actually. Not as smelly as I thought it might be.
Well, it actually appears to be the coolest place in the entire festival, which is nice. So, this is a podcast. We'll tell you all about it in a second. The disclaimer before we go any further at all, we've done this disclaimer the whole time we've done this. We do both work for environmental charities, but these are very much our own views and the views of the people we're going to get up on stage. So if you've got any problem at all with anything that we say, take it up with me and him and not with anyone for whom we work. If you know who that is, and if you don't try and find out. Thanks very much.
You're going to get sacked for saying that.
Yes, we are, yes. So, Ol, tell people about the podcast.
Right, so has anybody here... ever listened to this podcast before?
Whoa!
Some people. Excellent. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast. For those who haven't, we are Sustainababble. We are a podcast, I guess, that tries to have a laugh about how hard it seems to get things right and do the right thing with regards to the environment and social justice. But we also like to talk about the naughty so-and-sos who do the wrong thing and then try to persuade us they're doing the right thing by greenwashing and all the rest of it. So we try to call that out. And when we do call it out, you ready with your button?
Yeah.
We sound this klaxon. That klaxon. When we hear the most kind of egregious waffle. So we do have some guests coming up on this show, so you have been warned. Thanks very much for joining us on stage, but if you waffle, you're going to get klaxoned. There we go.
Yeah, so one of the things we do is pick out the Sustainababble of the week. So we've been at this for a long time. Way back in 2015, one of the first bits of Sustainababble that we picked out was Will I Am or Will.I.Am.
Yeah, correct. Yes. No dot at the end.
Celebrity annoyance. Who came up with...
not what you usually call him, Dave.
No, that's not what you usually call him, but we're in front of a polite audience. Okay. So, yes. He came up with a thing called the EcoCycle brand, which was his attempt to bring recycled clothes to the masses. I don't know if anyone remembers this, but it was 33% of all of the contents of these products will be containing post-consumer waste, and it will be available for the whole public to buy exclusively in Harrods. And we got the then 5-year-old Arabella to tell us how much the medium Will I Am backpack cost, which was, I don't know if this is going to work, I only did this on the train, which was this much. Can you twiddle that knob at the top right, Ol?
Towards that one?
Yeah, twiddle it.
£1,415.
Yes. So there we are.
That is true.
She's still going. £1,415.
Yeah.
She's still going. Yes.
That's true. There were recycled belts that cost £50, I think. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
A classic of the genre of Sustainababble, where something pertaining to be green is, of course, absurd and not that green, but like ridiculously expensive and a vanity project. Other examples, we talked about a classic, another classic of the Babble genre, South Tyneside Council. Anyone here from South Tyneside?
Yes.
This
is all your fault.
This is your fault.
Yeah.
Go back and tell your councillors that they're babblers. They came up with a new initiative, which they announced with great fanfare, to make their taxis go green. So we thought, right, this is good. I wonder what they're doing. Maybe they're converting all their taxis to electric. Maybe they're diverting taxis away from schools or the most polluted routes or something like this, or linking up with park and ride, all good things that you could do. Yeah. What were they actually doing, Dave?
They were doing a fully recyclable license plate.
Fully recyclable.
And biodegradable.
Oh!
It can be disposed of, it says here, with scissors or a shredder, which, as Ol pointed out, so can I.
Yes.
Which doesn't necessarily make it
doesn't make you fully recyclable, in my book.
So we look at that sort of stuff. We also have some guests. We've had some top quality guests. We had friend of the Babble, Chris Packham, came on. We've spoken to superstar economist Kate Raworth. Other people. We spoke to the man from Shell.
Yes, we don't just
talk to our friends.
We don't only talk to people with whom we basically agree. We got the man from Shell on. That was weird. He had a very rustly coat made of oil, I guess, which made recording very difficult.
Yes.
But yeah, interesting. Go back and listen to that if you want to disagree with someone, because he was wrong. Anyway, what else do we talk about? We occasionally. So the whole point is to try and keep our peckers up and look at the lighter side. Occasionally, we can't avoid a bit of a freak out. One such example was, I think, episode 92, when we discovered there was that really awful report about all the insects being dead. So we got a bit gloomy about that.
Well, you got gloomy about that.
Oh, I got gloomy about that. That's right. Yeah, and then I recovered in time for episode 146, where we discovered that not just insects, but basically all of the animals are dead.
I got gloomy about that. But basically, what seems to happen, we've been off on holidays for 3 months now while Ol was procreating. Well done, Ol.
Thank you.
Yep, very good. And when we go away, bad things happen. So if we were on now, we'd probably
My procreation? Is that a bad thing?
It's very bad. I told you, it's a terrible idea. The Amazon being on fire, we talk about that. That wasn't our fault. We're not talking about it because we're not here. Boris Johnson, that's not our fault.
Not our fault.
Either.
We interviewed his dad. Do you remember that?
We did interview his dad.
That was weird.
Yeah, he had to go very quickly when I started asking him why his son was such a knob.
Yeah.
We started off poking fun at sustainable stuff. Actually, there's a lot less of it about, and that's kind of bridging us out to what we want to talk about. What we've noticed is that over the 5 years nearly we've been doing this, people have started to take the environment a bit more seriously, which is good, which is why we are all here. But what prompted us to start thinking about this, other than a good old chat with Steve as well, was back about a year ago, we had an interview with a musician called William Doyle, otherwise known as East India Youth. Don't know if anyone here knows him. He was nominated for a Mercury a few years ago, electronic artist. And he basically stopped touring, pretty much, not just because of the impact it was all having on his mental health, but because he remembered looking out over one of his gigs when they were finished and just seeing like a sea of plastic at a festival and thinking about the carbon footprint and didn't think he could reconcile it anymore. And so here's a little clip. It's a minute long from our interview with him, which will bridge us into what we're going to talk about next.
I think we should see a lot of artists ask these questions of festivals in particular, because festivals are like an ecological nightmare, I feel like. A lot of them are anyway. I think there's... I don't know this from experience per se, but I suppose they do have some sustainability quotas they need to fulfill. But I think artists should be looking at their policies, and if it's not good enough, then I won't play. I don't care how much the fee is. I think there needs to be like some boycotting going on, because people just aren't taking enough responsibility themselves, And I think that people should be playing less if that's what it takes, They shouldn't be playing all these shows if that's what it takes, It's not your God-given right to travel and spread your art, your music, It's kind of, that's a very egotistical idea, I think.
Unless you're Bono.
Unless you're Bono, yeah.
So we're going to talk for the next 45 minutes or so. We're going to talk about, are festivals an environmental nightmare? Is everyone in this room, simply by dint of being in this room, by being here, an environmental terrorist? And we're going to find out, we're going to talk to Mary Caulfield in a second, who is boss in charge of green stuff. at this year festival, Greenbelt. And after that, we're going to talk to Tina from the Fracking Nanos, who's going to tell us a bit about sort of what being at a festival can do for all of the other stuff that's going on. Can you press number six on the bottom, please, Alt?
Number six on the bottom.
Yes.
Coming up.
Thing Dave can't decide if it is good or not.
Yes, so this is the thing that I can't decide if it's good or not, and that's a festival, right? So we're going to say, I love festivals, but I remember seeing William Doyle at, I think, the same festival he was talking about, and I, funnily enough, remember having a very similar image of all of that sea of plastic and the queues of
You're
people
so
driving.
Old.
Shut up. And the food waste and everything. And there's loads and loads of festivals saying they want to be green, not least this one. This is a good thing, but can a festival be a green thing? That's what we're going to try and look at. So, before we call Mary up, I've forgotten we're doing this bit.
Sorry, I have.
Mary, hold on.
Right, I'm excited about this.
I'm excited about this. We're going to give Ol a quiz.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Good. So, Ol, could you press the number three on the bottom, please?
Three on the bottom.
No, that's the wrong one. Stop that one. Number two on the bottom. Right, very good. Right, okay. So, if we assume that Ol weighs 75 kilograms, which after the holiday you've just had is a big assumption, how many Ols in weight of food waste were there left after Glastonbury 2017? How many Ols of food waste after 2017's Glastonbury?
I reckon...
How many Ols?
20,000 Ols.
20,000... No, wrong. Actually, far less. Far less.
Oh.
1,000.
So, for comic effect, I should have said.
Yes.
A much smaller number.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
I've ruined it.
1,760
right, okay.
Ols.
That's not very many.
Well, I don't know. What's Cambridge United's average attendance? About 1,760.
About that, yeah.
So, all of those people transformed into piles of food waste left after a festival, that's quite a lot.
That is
right?
a lot.
That is
yes.
quite a lot. That's
132
tons of food waste. Right. Now we need some audience interaction. We're going to ask three questions, and we'd like someone to come and take part in a quiz. Who'd like to take part in a quiz? Come on.
Yes.
Yes. Excellent. This gentleman here. Okay, very good. Can we have our other microphone? And Ol, can you press three on the thingy?
Yes.
I think spoiler.
Hello.
Say hello.
Hello.
What's your name?
Amos.
Amos. Thank you for coming up on stage, Amos. This will be painless. So, Amos... I just asked about Ol's weight in terms of food waste. The amount of waste generated by all festivals in the UK every year, how many Ol's is that? You had to take all of the waste, all not just the food waste, but all of the everything. How many Ol's worth?
60,000.
Ooh, what do we think, higher or lower?
Oh, yeah.
Higher, a bit higher.
120,000.
Ooh, yeah, not bad. It's 280,000 Ols.
Whoa.
Wow.
200, or about 140,000 Ols, given the holiday you've just had.
All right.
Which is apparently Sunderland. So there's a Sunderland's worth of human waste. There we are. No, that's not right. Anyway, what is... Okay, Amy, what's your second question? Think about all the different ways in which festivals create environmental impact. What do you think the biggest one of those is? So the single biggest problem environmentally that a festival causes?
Food packaging.
Not food packaging? Have another go.
Tents.
No, tents is a good call. One more, possibly involved.
Cars.
Cars, yeah.
Yes. Well
done. Travel, so this figure might be slightly out of date. Mary might have a better one, but apparently 60%-ish of the footprint of a festival is people getting to it, particularly if people get to it on an aeroplane. Wonderful bit of research here says that you could reduce the footprint of a festival by 34% by stopping international visitors attending them, which would be...
just saying, this is good that it's just audio, because otherwise I'd look... like I just kind of copied you.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, no, good point. Round of applause.
Good job it's just audio then, right?
For so many reasons.
Final question. Does more waste, yes or no answer, does more waste from a festival come from the festival-y bit or the campsite-y bit?
I'd say the camp... No, the festival-y
bit. Oh, so close. It's the campsite-y bit. 80%, so almost all of it comes from things like, as you said, tents being left behind and all of the waste and stuff like that. So thank you very much, Amos.
Round of applause for Amos, please.
Round of applause for Amos. Woo! So, without any further ado, let's get to the stage. Please, Mary Caulfield, Director of Sustainability, who I'm sure will give us her correct job title in a second, for the Greenbelt Festival. What is your correct job title, Mary?
I'm Event Director for the Festival. Sustainability is just one of the things that I do.
One of the things. So you're the person who goes around and says to people, "What? Pick that up. Put that
we don't
that
need to. Greenbelters are lovely people. They pick everything up and put it where they're supposed to.
And that's the line, and you're sticking to it.
So,
probably true.
Our waste collectors say that this is the only festival where they don't actually have to pick the waste up off the floor because everybody puts it in the bin.
Round of applause for Greenbelt.
Well played, everybody.
Fantastic. So some of the stuff that that Paul sent me, so you were awarded Highly Commended by a Greener Festival, didn't win, I notice, in 2018 and 2017.
Dave, gosh.
It's not actually a competition, it's a rating system.
Which you weren't top of?
We were about third in Europe, so I'm happy with
very
that.
Very good, that'll do.
That's superb.
It says here you're working towards being sustainably powered and have reduced your diesel use.
Yep.
Yeah.
So our aim is to be entirely free of all diesel usage in the last 2 years. So in 2018's festival, we used 50% of the diesel we used in 2016's festival, which is a huge reduction, particularly because our festival's been getting bigger whilst we've been getting the diesel use less. And we'll be less again this year. We just don't know the stats until the end.
Very good. And what about plastics? You're hoping to be free, says here, of all plastics.
So we are free of the vast majority of plastics already. We're trying to be a trailblazer and be the first UK festival to be completely free of all single-use plastics. So,
Come on.
So we don't sell anything in plastic. So all our caterers and traders only use fully compostable packaging. We don't sell bottled water. We don't give our artists bottled plastic water. And this year, our real kind of thing that I got very excited about, I got laughed at in our office because I was literally dancing around because I'm a bit sad about sustainability stuff. I'm a bit of a geek in that sense. Is if you look at your arm and you look at your wristband, you will see that your wristband is made out of bamboo. Every other festival wristband on sale from UK suppliers is single-use plastic. This is not.
I wonder why there was a horde of pandas following me around.
That'd be it.
So this nice is as well, though.
So this is not normal. These things are
no.
Normally. What's normal
when you
in these
when
things?
You go to a festival and you get your fabric wristband, it has plastic threads woven through it to make it sturdy so that you can't snap it. So we've spent years asking all the manufacturers to make us one that didn't have any plastic in it and being told nobody wanted them, it's a waste of time, they won't work. So we found an organisation in Finland who made us completely plastic-free bamboo wristbands, and we're now encouraging lots of other festivals to use them as well.
Fantastic. Good stuff, Mary. Very good. So on the subject of festivals, so I'm obviously we're here today, and I'm going to a festival next weekend. I shan't mention its name. It's a far inferior festival. I'm going to. Is everyone in this room doing something that is bad for the environment right now?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us. That's fantastic. So we talked a bit before this, and you could look at all of those statistics that Amos was helping us with, and you could look at the sheer amount of waste, and you could say, does all this need to happen, all of this stuff?
It doesn't need to happen, but then most of the statistics you were using don't actually apply to us by quite wide margins. And that's part of what we're trying to do here is to inspire everybody to make changes and to do things in a different way. So everybody who's coming into this venue, who's learning all kinds of things about how they can look after the planet in differing ways, goes home and makes changes in their lives and talks to their friends and talks to their family, and they make changes too. But bigger than that is we're really passionate that actually festivals are places to inspire people and bring joy and spark creativity, and we need all of those things in order to make the world a better place. And as organisers of festivals, we need to be responsible and do it in a way which is not bad for the planet. So we try really hard, but more than that, what we do is talk about it incessantly. If you go and talk to other festival organisers and you go to festival industry events, I'm quite often known as that woman that keeps talking about sustainable stuff and asking them what they've done. And we're really, really almost kind of just talk too much about what we do, because what we're doing is modelling different ways to do things. So where you say, oh, a festival has all this much food waste, we're expecting that this year we won't have any, because our caterer waste goes to Real Junk Food Project. So that goes and is taken and used. It's not anything that's edible is taken by them and turned into other food. And any food that our festival goers don't eat goes into our composting bins, goes down the road to the local facility and is turned into something useful. So there are lots of things you can do that festivals don't do. And what we really, really, really want people to do is say, if Greenbelt can do it, we can do it too. And that's why we just don't shut up about this stuff.
Oh, good for you. Do you think you could go... Yeah, yeah. This is a feeling better about yourself round of applause, isn't it? I know those. Do you think you could go further in some areas? So some other festivals are totally vegetarian, for example. Is that a thing you've looked at? Is there a reason why you haven't done that?
Yeah, so one of the things about Greenbelt is about all the things that we do is about asking difficult questions and about encouraging people to think and make their own choices and their own decisions. We know that we have an audience who think about stuff a lot, and we're monitoring what they're doing with their diets, what they think about that. So I have a couple of sustainability interns who you might not have spotted this year out talking to people in the food queues of the food vans and the why are you buying vegan food? Why are you buying vegetarian food? If you're buying chicken, what could we do to encourage you to buy something that's different?
And then so you've got people, I just love the idea of there's people in the queue for meat and you've got people just walking up to them with clipboards going, oh, interesting. Interesting choice.
Noted. Noted.
Noted. Noted. What was your postal address?
Do you know this song?
If you gain weight from too much chow, I will never call you a cow. I respect you and cows.
Don't use cow as an insult.
There you go.
This is the music. This is
the vegan rap for
you. Vegan rap. This is a genuine piece of music that you must
available
check out
on YouTube.
Yeah. Sorry, what was I saying? Yes, very good. But you don't do it in a kind of invasive kind of way. You just try and find out.
No, and I'm a big believer in enabling people to be educated and to understand things well enough and to make their own choices. I think that a show of hands, which doesn't really work on radio, okay, cheer really loudly if you would be annoyed if I took away all your food choices and told you what to eat.
Yeah! Cheer if you wouldn't. Right.
Surprisingly loud.
But there's ways of doing
told you
things.
People just want to be told what to do. All
the, the tyranny of choice.
I don't think they do, you know. And if you look at the guys at Shambhala who took their festival vegetarian, they will freely admit if you chat to the organisers, they partially did it basically just to make people talk. And actually what they're talking about at the moment is reintroducing meat in a future year to get people to think about sustainable sourcing and how that works and how actually if you look at what you're farming and you look at the need for fertiliser and where you bring that from and how you do sustainable agriculture, there's bigger questions. So they're targeting differing things in differing ways to us, but we're all still trying to get people to have a conversation.
Good for you. What about, and I don't know how to word this delicately, what about wee wee? What do you do with all the wee wee?
You're going to get sacked for saying that.
I'm not
going to
get sacked for saying that. And I don't just mean official wee wee, I mean like unofficial wee wee, if you know what I mean. Like hedge wee wee.
Unofficial wee wee.
Unofficial wee wee. Yeah, it's my stage name.
You need to change that. It's not good.
Is that a problem?
For us, no. It's right. Not that. That
people do not wee unofficially at Greenbelt.
Minimally, very minimally. So if you look around, you'll assume we have a very family-friendly audience. We don't have a very drunk audience. And that alcohol consumption is a key factor in where people do or don't choose to go to the toilet. Mm. We have a mixture of composting toilets on site and regular toilets. It's not that easy to get hold of large-scale quantities of composting toilets in the UK, but it's getting better, so we're upping our numbers. And we do have composting toilets for all the children because we know that they get inspired by it and then they're actually really good at persuading their parents to try using the composting toilets, much more effective than if we do it.
And this is one of the things that talking to you before, you were saying that what you try and do is get people to leave this safe, relatively hermetic environment and go home and change stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Has that happened? Do you know
hugely,
that people do that?
Hugely. So we do a post-festival survey. We email out to everyone who's bought tickets through our website and ask them differing questions on differing years. So a couple of years ago, we asked people to tell us the types of things that they changed in their lives. And 80% of the people who responded said that the changes they'd made was to make their life more sustainable.
For you. One more round of applause.
Definitely.
So, how long have I got, Ollie? You keeping an eye on time?
Yeah, I am keeping an eye on time, and for once, you are on time.
Very good.
So, you can ask all of the questions we were hoping to ask.
Very good. Well, what I want to ask, I guess, is what do you think all of the people in this room would be doing if they weren't at a festival right now? Because do you think festivals
family show.
do you think festivals get unfair stick, right? Because it's not like people would be sitting at home in their garden knitting daisies and, you know, waiting for the sun to come in so they can go to bed, right?
Well, quite, yeah. It's a bank holiday weekend. It's really sunny. So I live on the south coast. I can tell you, in our area, a huge amount of people would be getting in their cars, driving down the road, going to the beach, sitting on the beach. They'd go and buy a load of plastic bottles of water. They'd drink that. If they're in Brighton, they'd probably leave it on the beach. What we're doing here is inspiring and educating people and just having a great time and having a laugh. And I think it's unfair to say that because they're coming here, they're damaging the planet more than if they went to a National Trust property or they went on a short flight to Barcelona. Yeah. You know, there's, everybody would be doing stuff that involves consuming resources, consuming energy. They might drive, they might walk, they might go for a cycle ride. But we're trying to encourage everything we do here to be about thinking about what you do. So when you buy a festival ticket, for instance, with us, we say, how are you coming here? Have you thought about car sharing? Have you thought about coming on public transport? And if you're going to drive, actually, have you thought about offsetting what you're doing? Or if you've got an electric car, let us know and we'll plug it in and charge it for you. So it's getting people to think about stuff in different ways. And everybody in this field would not be sitting in their house knitting with a candle, not turning on the electricity, not turning on the cooker, and not eating any food.
Let's have a show of hands. Who would rather, not rather be, but would ordinarily be at home by candlelight knitting? That's pretty much everyone in the room for the purposes of the audio recording. That is everyone.
I think you might be fibbing.
Never.
So, last question, Mary. I'm going, as I said, I'm going to a festival next weekend. It's greenish. It's not as green as Greenbelt. Right? So we heard, you know, asking the question to Amos that most of the environmental impact of festivals is not caused by the site, but caused by all around it. So what next time you go to a festival, what's the greenest way to pack? What should I take with me? How should I, you know?
Yeah. So I think take things you already own. There's loads of companies out there who will sell you festival kit, in inverted commas. It's just a con. You don't need it. Take the things you've got, package them well, put them in your bag. Take it in a way when you can carry it. So when you get there, you don't need a buggy to drive you somewhere else. If you can go by public transport, do that. If you can't put all your friends in your car together, and look at how you're fueling that vehicle and what you're doing to compensate for the travel that you're taking.
Fantastic. Everyone give please a massive round of applause to Mary for all the work that you've done and for joining us on stage. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mary.
Anti-Enough of the Week.
Right, that was the announcement of a section called Anti-Inhofe of the Week. Does anybody know what an Inhofe is? Doubt it.
There's a hand. Oh, yeah.
Where?
Behind the gentleman who's standing up.
Okay, shout. Correct, Senator James Inhofe. That is absolutely correct. So Senator James Inhofe is a senator in America, and he thinks that climate change isn't real because there is still snow, and this proves that there is no such thing as climate change.
No, you think we're joking. This is the guy who took a snowball into the American Senate as proof that climate change wasn't made up.
It was almost as if it was winter or something,
yes,
and there was weather. So we have named a section of our podcast, which we do regularly, after Senator James Inhofe, in which we look for other people who are similarly idiotic,
shall we say. I can see one, not you.
Pardon?
I can see one.
Yes, I think we've got some Inhofes behind us.
There's an Inhofe.
Oh, there's one.
Who's that one?
Nigel Lawson is behind us.
Oh, he's an Inhofe.
Not literally. There is a photo of Nigel Lawson who... I'm not sure how I'd feel about that if he was really here. I'd have a few things to say to him. So Nigel Lawson, classic example, organised and funded a network of very influential climate deniers with kind of shady funding and have... over the last kind of 10, 15 years have successfully sowed seeds of doubt in the media and all the rest of it, really taken things backwards. So we look for examples of that sort of behaviour, that sort of Inhofery, and call it out. But so that we don't get too depressed, we also look for anti-Inhofes, and we celebrate the people who are doing quite the opposite, who are fighting a good fight, who are sticking it to the corporate nasties, who are frankly standing up for all of our futures, and we put them in a section called Anti-Inhofe of the Week. Now, I believe our next guest may have been in Anti-Inhofe Corner.
I think.
I can't remember the episode.
I think she has. Yeah.
But our next guest is the wonderful Tina Rothery from the Fracking Nanas. Hello, Tina. Come up. Hello, Tina. Just before we start, does anyone know, and actually, can anyone say in 10 words or fewer what fracking is? Come up to the stage and have a go. Amos! Come on!
Come on, Amos!
Go, Amos!
Hang on. Microphone for Amos.
I know Amos.
Preston is pulling up oil from the ground.
Pretty much. Basically it. Fantastic. Well, Tina, is that correct? Is that what is fracking, and has Amos got it right?
In a nutshell, it's the extraction of another fossil fuel, i.e. gas or oil, primarily gas, from underground about 2 kilometres down. You send down a vertical well, and then you go horizontal 2 kilometres, and then you send down a heap of water infused with chemicals and silica sand at really high atomic pressure. It goes down, and they blast through the shale rocks, and all those little cracks get filled with silica sand to prop them open, and the gas flows back. Sadly, it takes about 4 Olympic-sized pools to actually frack just once. Where we are, for instance, they want to do 47 fracks per well, at least 10 wells per pad. Those 4 Olympic pools that go down infused with chemicals and silica then pick up naturally occurring radioactive material along with the gas, and only 2 of those come back up. The other 2 stay down. No one really knows what happens to them, but it's locked out of the water cycle and heavily polluted. The 2 that come back as flowback water are heavily polluted, really difficult to get rid of. A couple of years ago, 2011, they fracked in Blackpool for the first time. They caused 2 million gallons of waste to come back, and they treated that very lightly at the Davy Hume sewage plant in Manchester, then dumped it in the Manchester Ship Canal. This stuff is highly toxic. Fortunately, the EU, who sadly we may not be a part of, because that gives us some safeguards, said you can't ever do that again. It must be properly treated. And there are only currently about 3 waste treatment plants that could hope to deal with this. And even then, they won't clean the water up to a usable standard. When you talked about the waffle that we hear, they say...
Hang on. Klaxon's ready. Right. Go for it.
They say that what comes back, they'll recycle it. Now, how we see recycling...
Klaxon that.
Yeah. Our version of recycling is that you put it to a good use again. Their version of recycling is they will use that again and again to frack, making it ever more toxic and ever more unlikely you can get rid of it. And I met Nigel Lawson.
Oh, dear me.
Really?
I gave evidence in the House of Lords in 2012, and 3 of the Lords were asleep in the special committee when we walked in. And Lord Lawson was a very bitter man. And what they tried to do was they tried to take the entire shale gas process and go, but which bit bothers you? Is it the air pollution due to the methane going into the air, or where we are right now, the nitrogen and methane being cold vented? Is it the potential for water contamination because of leaks and problems at the top and at the bottom of the well that could get into your aquifer or your groundwater? Is it the potential harm to your soil due to those leaks? Is it the fact that there are 500 vehicle movements per frack? Don't forget, 47 fracks per well, 10 wells per pad, potentially 80 pads where we are in a 500 square mile area. The quantity of industrialization of our community is insane. And I don't know if anyone saw the papers today. They started fracking again 9 days ago. In 9 days, we have had 92 seismic events. Tiny, yes. But just because you can't feel them at the surface, they affect any infrastructure. And those are occurring 2 kilometers down where the pipework is, with the potential to damage that pipe and then allow leaks in the future. We have had our biggest one, we thought, was a 1.5 just recently, and that was felt by our neighbours. Last night, they had a 2.23. Currently, there's a limit set that if while they're fracking, they hit a 0.5 earthquake, they must stop fracking for 18 hours. And here's where you can play the noise again.
Oh, jolly good.
Because the rule works like this. If you're not currently fracking, so it's a trailing event that comes afterwards, you're not in control of that. You're not actually fracking, so you don't have to stop work for 18 hours. So last night's earthquake didn't stop anything.
There you go.
On top of that...
I've got this noise as well, hang on.
That's better.
Yeah, that's good noise.
I would give you space, but allow me to tell you one more really, really bad thing that happened this week that really requires a big boomy noise. is Ooh. It was released in a redacted document that's just come out in the Eye yesterday, and it was under embargo. But the BGS, the British Geological Society, who we rely on as a government body to tell us the truth, warn us when it's unsafe, and to be independent, have a deal with Quadrilla, the fracking company, of non-disclosure agreement. They will not tell the public anything unless Quadrilla says it's okay. That's absurd.
That's not good.
Anyway, that was in the Eye as well. So you will find these things to be facts.
Thank you.
Tina, you've...
I don't want noise to play.
Yeah, I don't know which noise to play.
I can play the sexy music. I just want to use it for something.
Okay, we haven't used it. I suppose this is the sexy non-disclosure
sexy
arrangement.
This is the non-disclosure music. Sexy music.
Yeah,
there we are. Yeah, so we can... Yeah.
Thing,
go on then, play it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not disclosing.
I'm picturing the head of Quadrilla and the head of BGS getting it on.
Family show, Tina. Back. Family show. Family show.
That's enough of that, I think.
Crikey.
Didn't know that was going to happen soon.
Very effective, that music, isn't it?
Big affectionate
dance. So, Tina, get it right. Back on track. This isn't, I hope, as facetious a question as it might sound, but what is it that people, so many people, get evidently so... you know, upset, cross, angry about with regards to this industry? Because, I mean, I don't know anything like the detail of the fracking industry or any other industry, but clearly those sorts of practices go on in other industries that we don't know about. But there's something about fracking which, when it comes to a community, really, really gets under their skin. Like, what is it?
So 2011, when I started realizing what fracking was, there were three small groups in the country. Currently today, we have 400 groups. Since 2011, this is how infectious it is and how much you realise when it comes to your community how important this is. It is now banned or paused in Scotland, Ireland and Wales. Many countries have banned it long ago. But when we started, it was permitted in all of those places. When we started, it was only the Green Party on our side. Now it's Labour, Lib Dems would ban it as well. And when we started, none of the unions were really with us, but now all of the unions except the GMB. So we are winning in incremental bites. They have no full-on production fracking anywhere in this country and never have. But that's not...
That's got to be worth a cheer. That's got to be worth a cheer.
Yeah. And that is purely down to individuals in communities. Because other than Friends of the Earth, who've been in a huge help, and to a certain extent Greenpeace and some of the other organisations in environment, really, this was just communities rising up. Because once those groups started jumping up, we couldn't support them from the first original groups. So rather than go in and say, here's your problem, here's how you solve it, or let us help you, we went in and said, here's your problem, you're going to need to face it yourself. And then the most beautiful thing started happening was that really unique groups sprung up all over the country with a different way of fighting. So instead of us saying we're all a franchise of this one method, there were groups that set up and they raised money and they bought us legal advice. They bought us research documents. There are other groups like, I mean, even the nannas will occasionally jump in and slightly slow down your truck for you if you want, mainly because nobody slows down trucks better than an 86-year-old woman with a walking stick who you can't push out of the way. So, yeah. We're also the welcome mat. So the reason we formed as Nanas in 2014 was every time I did media, for instance, it would say, Tina Rothery, eco warrior, climate campaign. I'm thinking, you know what? I'm just a really scared grandma. A really scared grandma, because my granddaughter over there, I will die of old age if I'm lucky, but what is her potential? What's going to happen? Does she get that gift? And what things will she be thinking about in her future? So when we said we were Nanas and suddenly it was Tina Rothery Nana, then when you were sitting at home, you didn't think, I don't relate to that person. Most of the women particularly would look and go, why is there a Nana on the telly? That's weird. And then, so I think it was done to humanize. And I think what we do as a group as well is we bring tea and cake and knitting, and we fool you into believing that it's that easy. That you come, you sit at the roadside, we look at the fracking site, we knit, we eat cake, we drink tea, and we do. And that's amazing what bearing witness can do. And if that's the full limit of you, that's enough. That's more than enough. Whatever you can do is. But the thing that scares the companies and the regulators who aren't doing their job and the government that is so clearly corrupted and has the power of lobbyists, not the power of people impacting it, is that terrifies them. Because when people like us, the nanas, the grandmas, the grandpas, the brothers, the sisters, the everyday folk, not the eco warriors, the climate campaigners, and the people who aren't us, but when we do it and we care, then that makes a really big difference. And so what we do also is we realize when you walk through the door marked anti-fracking, it opens the whole picture. So we can see the power of the lobbyists on our government. We can see that the media mislead us because there's big PR companies buying space. We can see that our academic institutions are not being given the freedom to tell us what they really found. They can only tell us what they were paid to find within that parameter. The fact they bumped into all this other dangerous material, they can't tell us that because they were paid for this study. But once you realize that happens in fracking, that's when all of a sudden you go home and you say, wow, what else did they do? When I was giving evidence to the House of Lords, Lord Lawson said, why are you fussing about the earthquakes when the coal mining industry caused so many more? Why didn't you complain about that? I was like, I didn't know. Do they? Were there all those earthquakes of the coal mining? And I'm thinking, I need another group.
Thank you for telling me. Thank you for telling me, Lord Lawson.
He dozed off. The mother of parliament's there, asleep at the wheel. So you touched on it a bit in that answer, but presumably the people you're finding joining the groups then aren't, like, they're not environmentalists waiting to find another environmental cause to get going on, or are they? Or I mean, it feels more like it's a wider
Karen,
thing.
Karen, Trace, would you both just stand up? Ex-police officer, parole officer. Woo! I don't even know what you used to do, Karen, but I know that you're not in optimal health and that, thank God, you, Nick, because you're so wonderful to bring with us. So, yeah, a retired teacher. No, these are everyday. And I think that's why the nanas, I think when I first became an activist, I went and I spoke to activists and they said things like, don't talk to the BBC and never speak to cops. And I thought, I can see a problem there in that I like to impact each individual human. Mm. What you're wearing as your job makes no difference to me. You were born a baby. You were perfectly adorable once. The fact you're in the wrong job now is not your fault. So, and
just
that's
for,
you
just
too.
For listeners at home, Tina is addressing this to all.
Unlike Dave. So I thought, wow, is that what activism is? And I have to conform into these little shapes. Whereas to me, the reason I was becoming an activist was because I wasn't going on anybody else's ride any longer. Yeah. Don't tell me I'm going to go do this. Don't tell me we're going to have a war. And don't tell me we're going to sell arms to Saudi. And don't tell me we're going to get more fossil fuels out of the ground when we know it's the worst thing we can do. And if you're telling me that's the government I'm with and that's my life, I'm going to get off of there and I'm going to stop. And I'm going to stay stopped until I can find some other way to be. And it doesn't mean following anyone's rules. And I think that for me, I freed myself up and got that empowerment when I decided I was an autonomous individual activist. And I'll hang with the ladies and the nanas. And if they're going to do something I'm not so keen on doing, I'm not doing it. And if the BBC man or the cop comes, I'm going to talk to them. And I'm going to tell them the story that they need to hear for their children. And I don't think you should ever go into anything imagining it's a gang or a group that you can't be part of, because you are the activist. And you do it your way and you do as much or as little. We have every Wednesday for 106 weeks at the side of the road where we protested for nearly 1,000 days now at the fracking site. At least 30 to 50 women gather every Wednesday morning and we walk up wearing white and we have a silence at the gate. And then we spend the entire afternoon singing and dancing. The fact that they don't run any trucks in for 4 hours isn't our fault, really. It's a side byproduct. We were just having a good time.
Byproduct of a party.
But that's the
I've
point.
I've had parties like that.
I could lock on, and I have finally given in to one lock on. And I didn't want to do that level of action, mainly because I didn't like the idea of the sanitation requirements. But I felt that at some point, it was when they introduced an injunction and I couldn't dilly-dally in front of the vehicles without threat of prosecution. So there was
so
the opportunity.
So that's now not allowed?
Nothing is allowed. Okay. I can tell you, in the last 1,000 days... of protesting, we went from literally building towers at the gates and sleeping overnight, blockading them, to now I'm allowed to hold my banner. And I danced the other day for 3 minutes in front of a truck and I was arrested and in jail for 4 hours. Oof. I then did it again for 6 minutes and got 8 hours. I wondered whether it was raising. And no charges on the 3 minute one, but I'm being charged for very bad dancing or something similar on the next one. And I think
can
you have
just
to
move your foot in. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. There we go. It's a matter of keeping your sanity and your strength and your ability to go on, because if I want to leave, It's got my granddaughter's face on every exit door and every child in this room. So once you know the truth, much with many things in life that you believe in and you understand, that once you realize a truth, you cannot unknow that truth. So therefore, how can I walk away and say, you know what? I reckon Trump, Boris, they all care. They really care. And Ollie's got to be safe and have a really long and happy life because they won't get any more fossil fuels and they'll do it for the good of Ollie. Because we know they won't. And when you know they won't, as a parent and grandparent, how do you dump that obligation? We've got one job, keep them alive and well. And I think that's a responsibility that you can't walk away from, and that once you know something, you have to act on that. But that you don't have to give up your whole life to do it. Karen can spare us 2 hours a week, and then she does a lot of stuff online. Other people, once a month, they come. But it doesn't matter what you do, so long as I think that we find within each of ourselves the activist that we are, rather than just a human who sometimes does activism, you know?
Very good.
No, superb, superb.
So, Ol, I'm doing my timekeeper thing with you.
Your timekeeper thing? How am I doing for time?
You've got 3 minutes.
3 minutes? Okay.
Yes. So ask you the first question, if you don't mind.
Time for my first question. Right, okay. Back to the script then. Okay, so... Well, there was a general plan. There always is a general plan. We don't stick to it. I want to know then what you think is going to be different after coming here. Because, I mean, presumably, you said you're at the, you know, you've been, you and the Nanas have been there for 1,000 days protesting consecutively, which for a start deserves a round of applause. That's astonishing, yeah. Astonishing act.
Along with the residents in our community as well, you know, it's a continuous turnover of people.
Yeah. But you've chosen to come here. You've chosen to come to this festival. Do you do other festivals and other events? I mean, but and if so, and again, this sounds more facetious than it is, but why? Like, I mean, what is it that you think is going to happen as a result of coming to talk to people here who, I'm sure this crowd is probably genuinely a bit different, but there's the risk, isn't there, that people sort of stroke their chins and go, oh, that's terribly interesting, and then go home and carry on doing their normal lives. What do you think you can change?
So I have done a couple of other festivals, and I will say, and this is not because I'm here, I have never been anywhere like this. This is amazing. You're also respectful, considerate, kind, caring. I mean, maybe not as all of the individuals we are, but I'm not watching anybody drunk and falling over. I'm not seeing cans in the river. I'm not seeing disrespect. And there's a real beauty with this festival that I couldn't have enjoyed it more. My granddaughter can run free and go completely free range and wild, and I trust the place that she's safe within it because the people here are genuinely warm and lovely, and we couldn't have enjoyed it more. But more than that, it meant to us as Nanas when we saw this invite, and there's only so much time you take away, and as this bad earthquake happened last night, we all felt really bad that our elderly neighbours had experienced such a shock. And we had calls at 1 and 2 in the morning from people who were going, are you on site? Are you on site? Is it all right? My books fell off. My coffee cup's fallen off. One lady who was in the toilet at the time that it happened and was terrified. So we feel bad leaving. But the most important thing I think we've ever done in this activism is outreach. And you can't do it on a computer. There is nothing like eye-to-eye contact to know when someone's telling the truth and when it does involve you. And that we have to work together as communities to make things better. So I think that it's only by reaching out and seeing the human. I do a lot of work online nonstop. But in the early days, when we went from those 3 groups to 400, that didn't come about online. We ran like Paul Revere through the country. We found the 65% of the country up for licensing. We went to the license areas and we held public meetings in those license areas. Might be 3 people in a church, might be 600 in a town square. Didn't care. Just dump the news on them. Here's what's coming to your community. Here's your potential risks. If you feel that matters, you're going to need to act. You couldn't have done that online. You have to do it flesh to flesh. I just think we miss so much online, and I love humans and I love community. And I, you know, you have to have your little wins, don't you? Like, we haven't won. We haven't stopped. And we crashed its share price. $1.20 for Quadrilla. Woo!
Couldn't happen to a nicer company.
Yeah, that is good. We do deliberately do that. We're quite canny, really. We might phone all of their suppliers.
Don't deliberately stop the trucks either.
Well, we did say to Eddie Stobart, we like you. Cute little trucks. If you keep delivering to a fracking site, we might think you're a bit like the frackers, and you wouldn't want us to interfere. And they were like, you know what? We just don't want to deliver there anyway. So then they didn't.
Very good.
And the cement companies, because it takes 40 minutes for cement to go off. So if you're slow walking anything, slow walk a cement truck. Local suppliers said, I can't be buggered with this anymore. The workers are away too long. The cement's going off. This is ludicrous. They raise their prices. Hit them where it hurts.
Very yeah, good.
Yeah. Tina, Dave's looking at me with one of his... You need to shut up now, looks, which I don't like. But before we say thank you, could we just find out, are you doing anything else on site today or tomorrow? And if so, where can people
tomorrow's
find you?
Tomorrow's a busy day. Tomorrow at 10:30, we'd like particularly to invite the young people because along with us, there are 16 of us who travelled as sustainably as we could by coach down here. And that's nine nanas and the rest, however many that is, seven children. Somebody else is counting them because I think otherwise we'd lose them. all of whom have participated in the youth strikes for climate with on Greta Thunberg's amazing school strikes, which has been such an important part of, I think, the activism movement. And so tomorrow morning, we did a workshop yesterday about how the nanas use activism. And tomorrow morning is how our kids use them. And what sort of, so there'll be all sorts of interesting props to play with and things for the kids. So it's more that we want to encourage young people to understand there is a role for them. It doesn't have to involve arrest, particularly if you dance better than I do. And that and that you can find your place somewhere. But it's sad, isn't it, that we have to do that? That we have to tell our young? You know, that's not what I want Ollie to think about. I want him to think about being a fireman or whatever he wants to be. But instead, we have to think about how we save their future. Very so good. Tomorrow morning, 10:30. And then I'm on a panel debate at some point about 3-ish in the afternoon, somewhere over there, at Pagoda. And then in the evening, we're doing the closing ceremony thing at 6. You're certainly getting your value.
Wonderful, wonderful. Can we say a huge round of applause and thank you to Tina and all of the fracking nanas. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tina. Did you like my passive-aggressive playing of the countdown music there?
That's right? Lovely, yeah.
Let's play out, shall we?
I think we treat our guests well by hassling them off the stage.
We're going to do this at the end, but I want to now do the most relaxing noise in the world. Can I do that now? Just to sort of take us into the next section in the world. So this is the most relaxing sound in the world, just to take us into our last section. We've all been worked up by Tina and the Fracking Nanas and by Mary and all the great things, and it's very hot, so we'll just take you down just for this final section with Ed Miliband reading the bingo.
83 80.
So we'll just let Ed carry on doing that in the background.
All the threes, 33,
which is nice. And speaking of Ed Miliband,
reasons to be cheerful,
which we had long before he came along, right? So reasons to be cheerful. Yeah,
They nicked that from us.
Yeah. So final bit of the podcast, we like to look at all of the stuff that we've looked at. So, I can't decide if festivals are good or not. What do you think?
Can't you? Is it really?
Well, I mean, I've got
you've got
script.
A view, haven't you? Yeah, okay, it's
yes,
in script.
You have to
Well, I mean, I think a lot of what Mary was saying rings true, doesn't it? Like, people wouldn't be at home by candlelight weaving yogurt and knitting and all the other things that we like to do. Or, frankly, you know, doing the normal things of life, like putting a washing machine on, having showers, driving to work or whatever. So I don't think the charge about festivals in and of themselves being a huge environmental kind of drain is necessarily fair, because there's a huge amount of activity that isn't going on. But I'm much more interested in the opportunity to speak with and listen to Tina and to Mary and to everybody, and to have these ideas, and it is a festival of ideas, and to talk to other people
and listen to some music, which you may have been able to hear in the yes. background.
It's going to be an interesting podcast to listen to on the podcast.
Isn't it?
Dull thud in the background throughout. Dull thud. No, I am definitely coming around to the idea that people inside this tent are not, after all, eco-terrorists.
Very good. Thing is, though, I bloody love festivals, right? Because this stuff, we both work for environmental charities, and everyone in this room spends a lot of time worrying about the state of stuff. It's nice sometimes to sit in a field with a beer and listen to some music and relax, because if you don't do that, you go spare, right? And you need that stuff. You need Brentford Football Club, and you need all of those things just to calm you down a
bit.
Right?
You need Brentford Football Club?
You do need Brentford Football Club, yes.
Not having that at all.
And I was really struck by Mary talking about, you know, just a space to inspire people, whether it's music you like listening to or talks you like listening to. And yeah, and let's face it, you can do a lot more in a place like a festival, like at home. I don't know whether or not my recycling goes in the sea. No idea. I mean, I don't put it in there. I put it in the green box.
Do you put your recycling in the
sea? And some large men take it away. But I'm pretty sure if someone tried to put it in the sea here, Mary would go up to them and loom heavily over him in a queue with a clipboard.
Yeah, one of those people with a clipboard would be there, wouldn't they?
Noted. So you can do a lot more, right? So probably actually you're having a greener time here than you would be somewhere else.
Are you talking about closed-loop recycling?
Oh, he's played the sexy closed-loop recycling music. Close my loophole.
Oh, stop it. We do have to stop it. Well, I was talking to Mrs. Ol the other day about this, because she works in plastics and stuff.
Stop the sexy music, sorry. Though. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, don't play the sexy music when talking about Mrs. Ol. Bad idea. Yeah, but she was saying, actually, and we didn't really talk to Mary about this as much as we should have done, but a closed site like this where you can completely control where everything's going is probably makes a lot more sense than at home. So you shove, in fact, when we had our lunch in the very nice artist's green room, where we just shoved all of our compostable plates and all the food waste, it wasn't very much because it was delicious, in the same bin, and you know that it's going to go to the right place and it's not just going to be burnt or shoved in a dolphin. So I think, yeah, it is a really exciting place to, apart from anything else, try new ways of living and be certain that the stuff you're doing is making a difference.
Fantastic. I agree with you. And the last thing I wanted to say is there was a statistic what I found. You're going to play the sexy statistic music?
Oh, sure. Yeah, okay. This gag isn't getting at all tired.
No. So here's a sexy statistic for you. Back in 2007, only 30% of people said they cared about the environmental footprint of their festivals. I don't know what it is now. Stop the music. Sorry, there was something I'm telling. But I bet it's more. There wouldn't be.
And that's the level of research you can expect from this podcast.
People wouldn't be doing all this green stuff if people didn't want green stuff to happen. It's the revolution, mate, and it's starting here. That's what I reckon.
Excellent.
We are all the revolution. That's what's happening.
We are.
And if that's not a reason to be cheerful, I don't know what is.
Exactly. Right, we better wrap it up. We're running out of time. There is music that you need to play for the end. So thank you, first of all, everyone here for coming. Give yourselves a big round of applause.
Big round of applause. Thank you to Amos for helping out with the question answer session. Very good.
Thank you, Amos.
Thank you, Amos.
Superb. Many thanks to various people who have helped us out in arranging this. Paul, Steve, Mary, of course, Mary and Tina and all the Fracking Nanas. We have one more round of applause for our guests, please. Thank you so much. And Chris on the desk for indulging our silly little noises and making all the technical stuff happen.
So you can get in touch with us. You can find this Facebook in all the places. Find this Facebook? I can never do this bit. You can find this podcast in all the places that you find podcast. Just search Sustainababble. We are on, right,
okay, you can do this.
On,
you can do it.
Facebook, just yes. Search Sustainababble. We are on the Twitter at the Babble Wagon. Oh, there's an Instagram at the Babble Wagon, which isn't us, someone else. There's an American graphic design company whose logo is a wagon. It's called the Babble Wagon, so that's not us. Or you can drop us an email to hello@sustainababble.fish. These t-shirts, what we are wearing, what are the greenest thing in the world, particularly mine. They are like all made out of what? Kittens, smiles.
Angel tears. That is green. It's made by T-Mill.
Fully recycled.
And you make
these if you want on our website at sustainababble.fish. Thank you to the legendary Dickie Moore for this music, what you hear. To the wonderful Arthur Stovall, who designed this for us free. It's very nice. And to Arabella Ols, 10-year-old niece, who was 5 when we started this, which was absolutely terrifying. Back when there were still like Liberal Democrats, Top Gear.
Some hair on top of your head.
Yes, all right. Thank you very much. You might then be confused by the listing in the picture and listing. So that's it, isn't it? We will be bunging this out on the feed in the next coming weeks, assuming it's recorded all right. Otherwise, we'll be business back as usual on our podcast in the middle of September. So I think that's it from us.
That's it. Thank you very much and enjoy the rest of your festival.
Thank you. I've got to hand this off.
Thank you for listening to Great Thinking, Ideas and Conversations from Greenbelt. At Greenbelt, we make a space where artistry meets activism, where the political meets the practical, where the sacred meets the secular. We think we're somewhere to dream up a better world, to dance and debate, to pray and to party. Visit greenbelt.org.uk to browse and download other great thinking from our recorded catalogue. We're Greenbelt. We're somewhere to believe in.